You know those cravings that hit you out of nowhere? Charred steak tacos, silky mushroom risotto, or a perfect summer salad. When the craving hits, Cook Unity delivers, made with real ingredients and no shortcuts. Get ready to eat meals delivered directly to your door, all tailored to your lifestyle, dietary needs, and cravings. Get what you're craving. Go to cookunity.com/crave or enter crave before checkout for free premium meals for life. That's cookunity.com/crave. You know those cravings that hit you out of nowhere? Charred steak tacos, silky mushroom risotto, or a perfect summer salad. When the craving hits, Cook Unity delivers. Made with real ingredients and no shortcuts. Cook Unity was made for adventurous eaters. With 160-plus award-winning chefs curating an ever-expanding menu of small batch meals. Get ready to eat meals delivered directly to your door, all tailored to your lifestyle, dietary needs, and cravings. Their roster of Food Network alums, James Beard Award winners, and acclaimed restaurateurs balance bold flavors and nutrition in their handcrafted meals, which are freshly prepared, delivered to your door, and never frozen. Get what you're craving. Try the freshest, best-tasting meal delivery made by your favorite celebrity chefs. Go to cookunity.com/crave or enter code crave before checkout for free premium meals for life. That's free premium meals for life at cookunity.com/crave.
Hey y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. And in this episode number 495, I'm welcoming back to the show Sharon McMahon.
And so the idea that our ancestors suffered greatly and chose not to grow weary in doing good, it was not based on some superhuman ability. They didn't have something that we don't have. They didn't have so much of what we do have today. But what they did have was a difference in perspective. That we must continue to do the next needed thing, that no work for liberty is lost, becomes part of the character of the country, and that we will continue our important work, even in the face of incredible adversity.
If you saw her name and you didn't know who she is, let me have the privilege of introducing you to America's government teacher. Back in 2020, Sharon started an Instagram account called Sharon Says So. It now has over 1 million followers. And there's a reason why Sharon diligently provides those who follow her account with factual information, unbiased, on how government works and current events, and just giving it to you without what sometimes media will lean one way or another. And maybe you just want to know information and draw your own conclusions. Sharon is your gal. Since starting that Instagram account, and she came on the show in 2021, she now has a Substack called The Preamble. She has a podcast, and she has a new book called The Small and the Mighty. I wanted to have her back on the show, one, because we kind of have a big election coming up. And while we can sometimes feel anxious about that or not know our part or not know how to participate, I feel like her newest book, The Small and the Mighty, is a great reminder that our country isn't built on one leader. Our country is built by lots and lots of people doing their part where they are for all people. And I want to encourage moms that your role matters in the shaping of our nation. If you didn't know already, I just wanted our mentor, Sharon, to remind you. And I'm not the best at history or politics. I share a little of my story in this episode. So I always feel like an idiot that I'm going to ask the wrong questions. And I am so thankful that Sharon is gracious and kind and just answers so well what I bring to the table. Definitely follow her for real political information and insight. She also provides a great link if you are wanting more information on voting where you are, your local government. So definitely check that out in the show notes, but let's get right to it. Here we go. Sharon, you're back.
It's
been 3 years. I looked it up. You came August 9th, 2021. What a world.
Oh my gosh. So much has changed in the last 3 years.
Do you? I feel like.
I feel like things have changed. What's changed for you, Heather?
Oh, good grief. How much time do we have? This is not the Heather life update, but yeah, it's been a lot. And I'm just thinking about like even the questions I asked you then and what's pressing right now. And I was thinking you kind of have your thumb on the pulse of the political conversation.
Mm.
So my first question for you is, what are people asking you right now? Like what questions are you getting the most?
Yeah. I mean, like the biggest questions are like, will we be okay? That's honestly like one of the biggest questions. I think people are just feeling like a tremendous amount of anxiety over the approaching election. We are experiencing maybe a small amount of PTSD from 2020. Doesn't matter who you voted for. Nobody wants to repeat 2020. That was not fun. And I look at it a little bit like 2020 was like an emergency surgery. Like unexpected, like, you know, like what's happening? Oh my gosh, so many unknowns. And the 2024 election seems a little bit more like a planned surgery in which we have a little bit more knowledge of like what to expect when we're recovering from surgery. But nevertheless, many people are really still dreading it. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like people are just feeling like a tremendous amount of anxiety about what lies ahead.
Do you hear from people that this conundrum of like the lack of clarity on or are not really loving the choices and so maybe just stepping away from wanting to vote at all, wanting to participate? Mm. Do you hear that often or are your governors all in and they're like, why would you not vote? This is a privilege.
Yeah, I do think that perhaps the people in my community skew more towards politically engaged rather than away from politically engaged. But nevertheless, there are still people who are like, tell me why I should vote. Yeah. Convince me why I need to show up. And some of that is a function of the way the system works. It's not related necessarily to the candidates. It's related to the fact that we use in 48 states, we use winner take all in the Electoral College. And so it seems like, especially unless you live in one of like the seven battleground states, the seven swing states, it seems like who will win in your state is kind of a foregone conclusion. If I live in California, but I'm a Republican, what does it matter? If I live in Texas, but I'm a Democrat, who cares? You know, like that's, I think there's a propensity amongst people to think that way. And it's an understandable way to think. Winner take all was not actually how the system was designed to work. It's not how the system worked for the first number of decades of the United States. And so we're now sort of reaping the harvest of what we have sown. And a lot of people don't think what we planted tastes particularly delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I remember after even 2020, you doing a lot of educating on the Electoral College, and it was news to me. I skew science, okay, Sharon? I grew up in, I told you this, but this has been a long time ago. I grew up in a home of politics. My dad ran for governor, state senate, U.S. Senate, Congress. That was my life, and I ignored it completely. And I have a little bit of a like PTSD about it. But I didn't know about Electoral College. I didn't know, like, why did we even, should we do a little bit of educating? Why did we even make that choice as a country to not be winner takes all?
Yeah, what you're describing, Heather, is a little bit like when you eat a food and you get food poisoning from it, and you're like, I will never eat meatballs again. You know what I mean? Or you have too much to drink in college, and you're like, I will never look at peppermint schnapps the same way again. It's like just thinking about it makes you feel like a little queasy. Maybe that's your upbringing where you feel like, I can't do it. My dad ran for governor. I just can't do it. We ended up with the Electoral College because they couldn't agree on another system. That's really the bottom line, is that it was a last minute compromise. It was added at the end of the entire Constitutional Convention. It was the only system that was not outright rejected. It wasn't like, okay, guys, we've come up with the best possible idea. It was, this is the only thing that people, especially people from the slave states who had a very different idea of what proportional representation should look like, it was the only thing that they would not outright reject. So that was, you know, sort of the genesis, is that it's added at the end as a compromise. And then one of the other things that they add into the Constitution is two ways to change the Constitution. The framers of the Constitution were absolutely rebels in their time. They were eschewing European monarchy, but they also had a degree of humility to know that, like, we can't predict everything that will happen in the future. That's stupid and a vanity to think that we can. Like, we don't even have, even in 2024, we don't have the ability to predict what AI is going to do in the year 2030, right? Like, the idea that they could see almost 250 years in the future is silly, and they knew it. So they wrote two different ways to change the Constitution into it. Like, hey, if you need to make any adjustments, here's a couple ways you might do it. And we have adjusted the Constitution, for lack of a better word, 27 times, right? So the idea that, like, it's meant to, it's not holy scripture. It's not thus saith the Lord, and nothing, no word shall be added to or subtracted from. It's a document that dudes who wore wigs and owned other human beings wrote out with a goose feather.
Whale bones. The whalebone situation.
Yes.
Y'all don't even have to read too far into Sharon's new book to say,
to get
wow,
to the whale bones. That's right.
Wow. These were our leaders. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, yeah. So they, like, gave a way to make changes, and we have.
Yeah. But winner take all in the Electoral College is not in the Constitution. States get to decide for themselves how they want to allocate their electoral votes. Two states have decided to divvy them up, and the other 48 have not. But that system did not emerge until the early part of the 19th century.
Okay.
So we're not using the system as it was intended. Even if we believe that the system as it was intended is perfect and immutable, we're not using the system as intended.
So what's your view? Like, do you think the system should be changed?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Most people, the overwhelming majority of people agree with that. Like, they're like, this does not work. I am not being well represented. I'd like you to find literally almost everyone you would survey. Are you being well represented in Congress right now? Almost everybody would say no. Do the presidential options adequately represent your viewpoints? Most people would say no. They would like to have more options. They would like to have more choices. They feel like, especially if you live in a state where there's a later primary, by the time that you get to vote in the primary, everyone else has dropped out. Like, how is that fair? By virtue of the fact that you live in Connecticut, you get no say in who the candidates are. That's not fair. They also didn't use primaries when the system was founded. presidential primaries did not become popular until after World War II. So that's another example of, like, how the system has changed. And I do think the system is meant to evolve as the United States grows and changes and evolves. But there's many ways. I mean, I could talk for the 2 hours about all of the ways that I think the system should be changed to better represent Americans.
And y'all can subscribe to Sharon's Substack.
That's right. Thepreamble.com. You can read all about my options. Yes.
We will lay that out for you there.
Mm-hmm.
You know those cravings that hit you out of nowhere? Charred steak tacos, silky mushroom risotto, or a perfect summer salad. When the craving hits, CookUnity delivers. Made with real ingredients and no shortcuts. Get ready-to-eat meals delivered directly to your door, all tailored to your lifestyle, dietary needs, and cravings. Get what you're craving. Go to cookunity.com/crave or enter crave before checkout for free premium meals for life. That's cookunity.com/crave.
So a person's like, I've heard, my husband is very, you know, knowledgeable about this stuff. And he said, well, if my vote even mattered. Mm-hmm. Have you heard this? Mm-hmm. If my vote even mattered, it goes right along with this. So give us the pep talk, given the fact that this is the system.
Mm-hmm. What state do you live in again?
Texas.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. It's very common for people in a deep red or deep blue state to feel like, yeah, well, good thing my vote will be erased in the presidential election because there's no point. It's a very common way to feel, which again is one of the reasons I think we need to change the system. But of course, one of the most important things to remember is that the down ballot races impact your life so much. We think everything is about the president. And yes, the president is very important. But in terms of the things that actually impact, what kind of education do my kids get? Does the trash get picked up? Does Texas's electrical grid collapse when there's an ice storm? You know what I mean? Like kinds of things are handled at the state level. Also, there's a tremendous amount of democracy that is either upheld or thwarted at the state level because elections are run by states. Who is in charge of these elections? Who's in charge of making rules about elections? Those things really do matter. So the idea that like, well, the Electoral College ruins my vote, I understand where you're coming from, but I would number one encourage you to strongly consider the impact of your down ballot races on democracy. But also number two, the closer the election becomes in any given state, and you have noticed that Texas is that gap between red and blue in Texas has been shrinking over the last couple of elections. The closer that gap becomes, the more attention any given state will have from both parties. And that's actually a good thing. The swing states get all the attention from the candidates. They get the most federal money after the election. So there are advantages to having a state in which the outcome of the election is not predetermined.
Super interesting. And I totally think post-COVID we get like the local government matters. I remember when this guy was like, who the heck is Clay Jenkins? Why does he get to decide that I don't get to go outside anymore? Like, what the heck? Mm-hmm.
Your local officials matter. Yes. Mm-hmm. Your state superintendent of education matters. Your state department of health matters. Like, these have very real world implications on your life.
So where do you, is there like one website or does every state have their own website to get the best non-biased policy information on these choices?
Well, okay. So who is running and like who's going to be on your ballot, what the ballot will have on it, that kind of stuff, that's absolutely maintained by your state secretary of state. So that's one thing. You can always go to your state secretary of state website. I also have a page on my website that has, if you just go to SharonMcMahon.com/vote, you could enter your zip code. It's completely free from political advertising. Your information will never be sold. It doesn't have any editorial information about like, be sure to vote for Bob. It links directly to the candidates' websites. It shows you pictures of your ballot. So there's no like, and then Sharon subtly told me to vote, you know, only vote for Bob. No, you can just, it's going to show you who's on the ballot and then link you out directly to their website. So it's a tool that we built so that you could send it to a high school class that you want to have research something, so that you could send it to your friend who believes something different politically than you. And nobody is going to get to this page on the website and be like, well, I really felt like they were trying to tell me to vote for Bob, because there's none of that kind of messaging on it at all. So yes, you can get the information, some of the information from your state secretary of state, but I also have a voting tool on my website.
I love that. I'm going to send it to my now 19-year-old who can vote for the first
time. That's exciting. Yes.
Election. The only trick, and this is where I get my panties in a bunch, is, you know, he's at college.
Yeah.
So we got the mail-in ballot request, and then we just got a thing in the mail that says there was an error. What error? I have a master's degree. My husband has a master's degree. How did we not fill out the form correctly? Mm-hmm. And then I'm thinking of like friends of mine who are newer to the country and who've worked really hard to become citizens, and like English isn't their first language. And I'm just saying sometimes all of the lingo can get so convoluted.
Yeah.
We're just trying to do our civil duty and it's
totally
hard.
You're like, it shouldn't take people with PhDs to fill out a mail-in ballot. Right? This, like, apparently master's degree is not a high enough level of education.
No, I have, and definitely not in speech language pathology, apparently. I don't know enough political terms, but anyway, it was, that a little bit I got frustrated with, but I will definitely check out this website. I have been truly enjoying, I've been listening on Audible because I want to hear your voice. I know it's Minnesotan and there's
my Minnesota voice. Yeah.
I love it. It really makes me think of home. I've been loving it. And I am curious, as you curated, researched, put together, beautifully wrote these stories of 12 unsung Americans, what did you gain personally? I mean, I know you were an expert in history already, but seeing them back to back to back, even reading the audiobook as you're like rehearing, what stood out to you?
That's a really interesting question. What did I gain personally? And I think there's a couple of sort of important takeaways that I have had. One of them is how our ancestors, and by ancestors, I don't just mean people you are personally blood related to. I'm talking about our forebears in the United States, the people who, you know, shaped the fabric of this country, how much they suffered, and then how much they turned their suffering into purpose. Almost all of them, with just a small handful of exceptions, suffered tremendously. And I think sometimes today, because we have advanced so much as humans, we have rid ourselves of a lot of human suffering. And I would say that in many ways, that actually is a wonderful thing. Guess what? We have anesthesia. You know, like weird. You can actually have surgery without being awake for it. That's incredible. You can have appropriate pain control after having said surgery. You break your leg. It's not like a, well, leave Heather to die in the field because she's going to slow us down kind of situation. You know what I mean?
And the amount of tuberculosis, goodness gracious.
Yes, the number of people who died from smallpox and tuberculosis, contagious illness. Yes, that your children have a reasonable expectation of living to adulthood when they're born. Just that in the last 80 years, that when you have a baby born, there's a very, very high chance that they'll live to be an adult. That's a huge advancement in the face of human suffering. So I would argue that we've done a lot to improve the human condition in the last several hundred years. But nevertheless, suffering is part of humanity, right? If it's not suffering from an infected tooth, then it's perhaps an emotional suffering, a psychic suffering of some kind. And all humans likely suffer at some point from something. And I think in part because our viewpoint on what suffering is has changed. It used to be viewed as like, that is literally just a part of life. Half of your children will die before age 5. That's just how it is. And it doesn't mean they love their children less. It doesn't mean that they didn't feel sad when they died. It just, their view on what it meant is different. And so I think in many ways, we view suffering as unnecessary, traumatic, damaging pain. And that's not to say that it can't be traumatic or damaging or unnecessary, but so much of our human experience is based on how we view it, right? It's based on what meaning we make of it. And I think we have a propensity today to turn away from making meaning of our suffering, and to instead rail against the person who we believe is perpetrating our suffering, or to rail against the concept of suffering itself, instead of doing something meaningful with it. And again, this is no judgment. This is no coming from a high horse. I'm just observing how things may have been different in the past versus today. So that's one thing that I've noticed that I've gained personally, is perhaps a different experience on suffering. And then one other thing is how our ancestors, our forebears, refused, those who made a significant difference in the course of history, refused to grow weary in doing good. And it seems like today, our first inclination, our knee jerk is, well, that didn't work. Never mind. Right? It's a little bit like,
People critique it. Two people critique it online.
Yes.
It's like, never mind.
Forget it. Yeah. It's not worth
the suffering.
Three other
people are doing it. That can be intimidating, right? Like, oh, there's already governor.
There's already a podcaster.
Yeah.
Why should I start a podcast? Yeah. There's already somebody doing that.
Yeah.
And so the idea that our ancestors suffered greatly and chose not to grow weary in doing good. It was not based on some superhuman ability. They didn't have something that we don't have. They were not better educated. They were not healthier. They didn't live longer statistically. Like they didn't have so much of what we do have today. But what they did have was a difference in perspective that we must continue to do the next needed thing, that no work for liberty is lost, becomes part of the character of the country, and that we will continue our important work, even in the face of incredible adversity. Those are just lessons that I personally need. Yeah. I don't know about the rest of y'all listening, but I personally need those lessons. I need to be reminded of them frequently. My brain can easily run away with itself, and I need to keep coming back to those lessons.
To me, it's an encouragement. I know this show is for moms. I wrote a book called Right Where You Belong, which is on occupying your God-given space, trying to encourage people that we have various assignments, and if we would spend less attention comparing, contrasting, and trying to do the big thing that gets attention, and just focus in on kind of stewarding where we are. You know, bloom where you're planted. It's not a new message, but it's what example after example, like you said, Clara Brown. I mean, oh my words. She was robbed of the chance of mothering her own children, and she mothered these men who were settling in the West. I mean, oh my stars. Angel of the Rockies is right. I loved that kind of maternalness of a lot of, at least the beginning of the book, characters who use their gifts and those experiences of suffering or just necessity, whatever skills they gained out of necessity, and they served and they held up high regard for certain values that they wanted to see. And and I love that it's the unsung. You wouldn't know. You would never have heard of their names. And
no.
And that's okay.
No, I know. I know. You know, I say this I say this in the book too, that Clara Brown, there's a historian who has done some work on her, although she's never had, you know, like a proper adult, you know, nonfiction book written about her, in part because she was an illiterate woman and it's difficult to piece together her original, you know, thoughts and feelings when she couldn't write them down. And so much of the historic record comes from conversations of people who knew her, who are recounting their own conversations with her. But one of the things that I think is really remarkable about her is that, you know, when she is freed from enslavement and eventually becomes a pioneer of the state of Colorado, and she becomes wealthy, and I'm not giving away the book by telling you a few of these details.
Spoilers.
Yeah, it's not a spoiler, but she becomes wealthy through the fruit of her own labor. She does not become wealthy based on chance or like winning some lottery or whatever. And one of the things that she chooses to do with her money, I think, is so remarkable. And that is that she decides to invest in the infrastructure of the town that she lived in. And I don't mean like sewers and, you know, fiber optic cables. The infrastructure of that time period was things like schools and churches. That was what held a community together. That was what helped create community that was cohesive, that could work together to get things done. And so Clara began giving her literally hard-earned money. We like to say hard-earned money, but this was hard-earned money.
Yeah. When you all read those chapters, you'll be like,
okay, you'll see exactly how she earned it.
All of my electronics around here do all the hard work.
Yes. Her actual hard-earned money. She began helping to found other churches to which she would never belong, because she knew that the freedom to worship in the way that you believed was appropriate was foundational to what a country and a community should be. And there is still a church that is standing in Central City, Colorado, that you can look up. It's a beautiful stone church, and inside, it's on the historic record or on the historic register. And on the inside, the ceiling and the walls and even the pipes of the pipe organ are all beautifully painted in this, you know, like 19th century painting style. And it was a Methodist church that Clara gave half of the money to build. And it took years to build this church. These things did not get, you know, popped up overnight like it seems like some buildings can today. It took years to make this church out of stone, to have the pipes from the pipe organ brought in, all effort, the entire interior hand painted. She gave half the money to build this church, and it was a church that she did not even go to or intend to go to. But she felt that it was important for the community to have these things. So she, throughout her lifetime, gave money to the Catholic Church in town, Presbyterian Church, the Methodist Church, because it was more important to her that others have the freedom that she was denied for the majority of her life than for her to try to force people to think the way that she did. And that to me is just like, who gives money to a church they don't go to? Okay, first of all, that's nobody does that. If you give money to a church, wow, it's because you go there. That's just like the modern mindset.
A little bit like a kickback, you know?
I'm going to benefit. Yeah. So I just love that idea that many of our forebears worked for freedom, justice, peace, goodness on behalf of others who were not like them. Yeah. And that is not something that only one political persuasion should be aligned with, that are the great, great Americans of the past and great Americans of today work for those values and ascribe to those virtues, regardless of their, you know, whether they have an R or D or an I behind their name.
Oh, my stars. I want to talk to you forever, and I can't because we have short time. But y'all, not only does Sharon have a Substack, she has a podcast. Here's where it gets interesting. And y'all can check her out there, and definitely check out The Small and the Mighty. Just a little New York Times bestseller. No big deal.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal. Congrats on that.
Thank you
so much for joining me today. One last word for the mom out there listening on her role in the shaping of our nation and her small and mightiness.
Every person, I firmly believe, is given important work to do. And that important work can change throughout the course of your life. When you have a newborn baby at home, your important work is taking care of yourself and taking care of that baby, right? And as your life changes, your important work will change as well. And that's not only acceptable, that's a good thing. That your capacity today will grow and increase. You will become stronger. You will have different opportunities. You'll meet new people. So do not grow weary in doing good. Even if all it seems is like I'm taking care of this baby, it does not sleep. It's a season, and your seasons of life will change. So take care of yourself, and don't fear that this is what the rest of your life looks like. It will, things will change, and in some ways they'll get better.
And look at our mentor here, Sharon. Just all that has grown in such a short period of time. And I just love that you have narrowed in on your giftings and your experiences, and you're using them right where you are. And so thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And all of your amazing words in this book. So
thanks, Heather. I appreciate that.
So proud of you. Like a proud little mom, I'm proud of you.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. I do hope you check out her book, that it is an encouragement to you where you are. To me, it was kind of like, if we forget to study history, we repeat history. You know, you've heard that old adage. I also think if we forget to look back at history, we look at our present and we live in more fear. And so I just hope that, if anything, the reminder of the fact that maybe these aren't the worst times ever is an encouragement to you to recognize what you can control and what you can't control about your life right now, and to not grow weary in doing good. I felt really encouraged by that. Looking around, what are the small and important things that you can do or be right where you are? And I think it kind of even goes back to the Lillian conversation I had last week. You know, she just kept following God. God, what do you want me to do here and here and here, and how it integrated with other people using their gifts. So I'm going to pray over us. Lord, man, It's another season of, I think it's the enemy coming in and making us feel like you're off the throne and that life feels real unstable sometimes when there's changes. And I pray, Lord, that we would find our firm foundation on you, God, that your Holy Spirit would be active and alive in our hearts and minds, so we would hear from you what is for us in this time. For that mom with the newborn, I pray you would encourage her heart right where she is, that although it may not be applauded today, that she is doing an important work. And for the woman who is caregiving for her parents or her spouse or a child, and it is daily, tedious work, but it is not small in your mind. Lord, I pray for her heart and soul. I pray over these elections, Lord. We know that you are sovereign and good, and that nothing is a surprise to you, and you haven't left your throne, and you are always, always working, that we can trust that. I pray that we can do the good where we are, that we can shine a light of your love and grace to the people around us and everyone we interact with kindness and goodness. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, y'all, for joining me. Next week, we're doing something a little different. My friend Courtney DeFeo of Pardon the Mess podcast is joining me here. We're talking about parenting boys versus parenting girls. And we know there's a wide spectrum even within those categories. We're just going to have like an honest conversation. And then later in the week, we will move over to her show and continue the conversation into the differences in the dating realm and dances and all of that trickiness that so many people will message me and her on, like, how do you handle dating, or why aren't people dating? So why aren't teens dating? Anyway, tune in for that next week. Once again, always thank you for sharing with your friends any episode. You come up to me, you tell me you've been listening, and that is such an encouragement to me and to keep this show going. So appreciate you where you are, doing what you can by sharing the show with your people. I'll see you here next week. Adios. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone, because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.